6937 заседание Совета Безопасности объявляю открытым. Предварительная повестка дня сегодняшнего заседания гласит: ситуация в отношении Ирака. Повестка дня утверждается. Что такое? Не надо фотографировать? А почему?
Это только официальная фотография разрешается.
Ага. В соответствии с правилом 37 временных правил процедуры Совета, я приглашаю представителей Ирака принять участие в данном заседании. Решение принимается. В соответствии с правилом 39 временных правил процедуры Совета, я приглашаю специального представителя генерального секретаря и главу миссии Организации Объединенных Наций по оказанию содействия Ираку, господина Мартина Коблера, принять участие в данном заседании. Решение принимается. Теперь Совет Безопасности приступит к рассмотрению пункта 2 повестки дня. Я хотел бы обратить внимание членов Совета на документ С-2013-154, второй доклад генерального секретаря в исполнении пункта 6 резолюции 2061 2012 года. Сейчас я предоставляю слово господину Мартину Коблеру. Прошу вас.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. At the outset, let me take the opportunity to wish happy Nowruz to all those who celebrate on this 21st of March. Mr. President, thank you. I'm honored to present to the Council today the second report of the Secretary General pursuant to paragraph 6 of Resolution 2061 on the activities of UNAMI. I shall also brief the Council members on the most recent developments in Iraq. I would like to begin by describing two significant and contrasting events that recently took place in Iraq. On 27th of February, Iraqi Airways flight number 157 landed at Kuwait International Airport. This historic flight was the first after 22 years halt in commercial air traffic between Iraq and Kuwait. And this event affirmed the strong desire of the leaders of both Iraq and Kuwait to open a new chapter in their relations. And these relations have been heavily burdened by history. However, a few days later, on March 4th, over 40 Syrian soldiers and 10 Iraqis were killed inside Iraqi territory. And this week, a series of atrocious terrorist attacks added more innocent persons to the long list of victims of such attacks. My condolences go to the families of the victims and the people of Iraq. These incidents demonstrate how Iraqis face a complex set of interrelated problems, among them the very real potential for a spillover of violence from Syria. Such destabilization would add to and fuel the existing political and security challenges facing Iraq, which threaten the achievements of the last decade. Since late December, tens of thousands of demonstrators in Iraq's western provinces have taken the streets to voice their grievances. Their demands are centered upon issues of human rights and access to basic services. They feel unprotected, insecure, and excluded. My colleagues and I witnessed this firsthand in Ramadi, Samarra, Mosul, Fallujah, Tikrit, Kirkuk. Around the country, we listened to the demonstrators' frustrations. Over time, they spoke more harshly and proposed more radical solutions. The volatility on the streets is also reflected at the political level. The ministers of the Sunni bloc al-Iraqiyya continue their boycott of cabinet meetings, which have lasted for almost 3 months. Political coalitions are weakening. In essence, the political fabric is fraying. The government has taken a number of initiatives to address the demands of the demonstrators. I have welcomed these efforts, which have yielded some results. One such initiative is a committee chaired by Deputy Prime Minister Dr. Shahristani. The committee has reported that it has facilitated the release of around 3,400 prisoners. In addition, all female prisoners have been transferred to their home governorates, where they will serve the remainder of their sentences. These measures are in direct response to the demands of the demonstrators. The committee has also reinstated pension payments for 11,000 public sector retirees
who were members of the former Ba'ath regime. Combined with decisions on other issues, the Shahristani Committee claims that their decisions have covered roughly 100,000 individuals. A second committee under the chairmanship of the National Alliance head, Dr. Jafari, is focused on finding common language for the three pieces of highly contentious legislation: the law on counterterrorism, the accountability and justice law, and the new general amnesty law. Here, tangible results still have to be achieved. Mr. President, since the onset of demonstrations, I have sought to advance inclusive and direct political dialogue on national reconciliation. I have offered our good services, good offices, firstly as a means of relaying information between the demonstrators and the government. I have expressed our approach as follows. First, UNAMI is an impartial actor. We keep equal distance from all sides. We offer good offices, whether for mediation, convening, or witnessing any negotiated agreement. Second, however, UNAMI is not neutral when it comes to human rights. We have spoken up against the increasing use of sectarian language. We have advocated the principle of nonviolence, including to the demonstrators. We have called upon the government to exercise utmost restraint. Third, UNAMI urges the government to respond to those popular demands which can be addressed in the short term and to do so immediately. Other demands will require more time for a response. The demonstrations have been underway for nearly 3 months now. However, the mistrust among the components of Iraq, Shia, Sunni, and Kurds, and other communities goes much deeper. The deep-seated lack of trust threatens the political fabric and the social bonds that should bring Iraqis together in one united federal country on the basis of the Constitution. Mr. President, members of each and every ethnic and social group continue to be the target of acts of terrorism, assassination, kidnapping, including while practicing their faith. Terrorists seek to ignite sectarian conflict and turn the clock back on Iraq's nascent stability. In total, acts of terrorism from November 2012 to the end of February 2013 have claimed the lives of almost 1,300 civilians. More than 3,000 innocent Iraqis have been wounded. Furthermore, almost 600 Iraqi security forces have been killed and 1,000 injured as a result of these atrocious terrorist acts. I have condemned these acts in the strongest possible terms. I have called on all Iraq's leaders and religious authorities to rise as one to stop the bleeding. Relations between the central government and the Kurdistan region government continue to be strained. Kirkuk remains the flashpoint for Arab-Kurdish relations. On 16th January, for example, a series of attacks resulted in 26 deaths and the wounding of 190 other individuals. The absence of President Talabani, who has had a truly stabilizing role in Iraq, is bitterly felt, and I wish him also from here speedy recovery. I strongly encourage talks between the Iraqi army and the Peshmerga on the withdrawal and relocation of troops to continue. To bring fruitful relations between the central and the regional governments, the passage of the revenue-sharing law and hydrocarbons law would be crucial. I call on the parliament and the political blocs to reach a consensus on these laws without further delay. And I wish to renew my offer of good offices to the parties and call upon their goodwill. The sharing of the immense natural resources of Iraq in a fair and equitable way is a must and a prerequisite to rebuilding trust. We will continue to build trust, no matter how difficult it is. Mr. President, Iraq is set to hold provincial council elections in less than a month from now. On March 19th, the day before yesterday, the cabinet in Iraq decided that the council elections in Nineveh and Anbar provinces would be postponed by 6 months, with reference to the deteriorating security situation in these provinces. I have expressed my concern about this decision, as the citizens of these provinces are looking forward to these elections with great hope. As the Independent High Electoral Commission is continuing the technical preparations for the elections in all 14 provinces, I've called on the government and IHEC to ensure that elections can take place as scheduled in a peaceful and secure environment. I wish to commend the leadership of the High Electoral Commission, in particular Chairman Sarbaz Rashid, as well as the dedicated commissioners and staff of the Commission and polling stations for their excellent work. They are often subject to considerable pressure. Unfortunately, and despite our efforts, there has been no consensus to pass the law on holding elections in Kirkuk province. Mr. President, Iraq is committed to strengthening its relations with its neighbors. By doing so, it aims to fully take up its rightful place in the Arab world, the region, and the international community. I have mentioned the progress achieved towards the normalization of relations between Iraq and Kuwait, including through Iraq's positive steps towards fulfilling its remaining obligations under Chapter 7 of the Charter. A major milestone in this process will be the completion of boundary maintenance work, the finalization of the removal of obstacles along the border, in particular the three houses in Unkasar, is a necessary step. Understandably, this step is sensitive and politically difficult for Iraq. However, it must be done by the 31st of March. Also, I urge the government of Iraq to accept the funds set aside with the United Nations for the compensation of Iraqi farmers pursuant to Security Council Resolution 899. I sincerely hope that this progress will lead to consensus on further outstanding issues, including the file on missing Kuwaiti nationals and property. During my most recent visit to Kuwait on March 5th, I sensed a spirit of optimism within the Kuwaiti leadership. Therefore, it is with much anticipation that I welcome the upcoming visit of Prime Minister His Highness Sheikh Jaber Al Sabah to Baghdad in the near future. In December, I visited Saudi Arabia. I sensed the potential for relations between Iraq and Saudi Arabia to strengthen in a number of fields, including a prisoners' exchange based on the agreement reached between the two sides. It would be a noble gesture if an agreement be reached before the holy month of Ramadan. The opening of a border crossing between Saudi Arabia and Iraq with its 800 kilometers border, and the active and committed participation of both countries in a new regional initiative led by the United Nations Environmental Programme to combat sand and dust storms. I urge the two countries to build upon the recent visit of a high-level Iraqi delegation to Riyadh. The restoration of normal relations would benefit the two peoples and of the two countries and the region. Mr. President, more than a year has passed since UNAMI began its considerable efforts to facilitate the humanitarian transfer of the residents of Camp Ashraf to the temporary transit location of Camp Horia and their relocation to third countries. I wish to reiterate my best wishes on the occasion of Nowruz today, in particular to the residents of Camp Horia and Camp Ashraf. The urgency of relocating residents outside of Iraq was underlined on 9th of February when an attack on Camp Horia killed 8 residents and injured an additional 40. The Secretary General, myself, and others have condemned this attack in no uncertain terms. I have fully supported requests to the highest levels of the government of Iraq to improve security at Camp Horia. The government remains responsible for the safety and security of the residents in accordance with a memorandum of understanding signed with the United Nations on December 25, 2011. The government has assured me that it will spare no efforts in preventing further attacks. We face two major problems. First, the only durable solution is to relocate the residents outside of Iraq. I have visited Albania on 15th of March for talks with Prime Minister Berisha, and I welcome the decision by the government of Albania to accept 210 residents as early as next month. I sincerely thank the Albanian government for this humanitarian gesture. Albania is thus the first country to accept a large number of residents. I urge other member states to take similar steps. Yet, despite additional offers being made, the residents of Camporia continue to boycott relocation interviews with UNHCR. I join the Secretary General in urging the residents to fully cooperate with the UNHCR. Offers must be accepted. Second, the 100 residents remaining at Camp Ashraf refuse to join the larger group at Camp Horia until the completion of property negotiations. I encourage both the government of Iraq and residents to constructively engage with one another to promptly resolve this matter. I urge the residents to nominate their lawyers for this purpose. Finally, I also appeal to the camp leadership not to prevent residents who wish to leave the camp from doing so, to cooperate with the Iraqi authorities when it comes to medical treatment, and to abstain from aggressive behavior against our UN monitors. UN monitors must be able to freely interact with the residents of Camp Horia. Mr. President, I would like to thank the member states, in particular the European Union and the United States, for their financial contributions and their support to these efforts for the peaceful resolution of the issue of Camp Ashraf and Camp Horia. I also wish to recognize the hard work of, in the meantime, 136 UN staff, including 60 security staff who are actively working on this file. Mr. President, having spoken at length about the group of 3,200 members of the Mujahideen Khalq in Iraq, I would like to note that our far larger humanitarian effort is focused on three groups: the Syrian refugees, the returnees from Syria, and the internally displaced persons. Iraq currently hosts nearly 120,000 Syrian nationals. They have fled to Iraq seeking safety and humanitarian assistance. Most of the Syrian refugee population is currently located in the Kurdistan region. An average of 800 individuals enters the country on a daily basis. UNHCR is leading the humanitarian country team in conducting a massive emergency operation to respond to the refugees' humanitarian needs. This operation will support the government of Iraq in ensuring that the refugees are protected and assisted. I would like to commend the government of Iraq for its generosity and for its hospitality to the individuals and families seeking safety and security in Iraq. And I call on the government to extend its generosity by reopening Al-Qaim and Rabia border crossings. I also appeal to all member states to urgently step up their contribution to the refugee response plan, which still requires funding beyond June 2013. In addition, approximately 80,000 Iraqis have fled from Syria to return to Iraq in the last months. They fall into the larger group of 1.2 million internally displaced persons. Both returnees and the IDPs are in need of urgent humanitarian assistance. The majority of these persons live in informal settlements and constantly face the threat of eviction. These settlements are in an appalling condition, partly. Returnees and the displaced lack access to basic services, as well as proper public health facilities and schools. I would like to call on the government to increase the amount and speed of assistance it provides to Iraqi returnees from Syria. And I also call on the government to ensure the fast reintegration of Iraqi returnees. Mr. President, I would like to turn to the broader human rights situation in Iraq and specifically the administration of justice. This is an area that continues to be of concern. Many detainees continue to complain of abuse, mistreatment, and torture, in particular in prisons under the authority of the Ministry of Interior. Every case of torture is one case too many. Confessions under duress are unacceptable. Courts continue to be under-resourced, and this causes long delays in processing cases beyond lawful limits. I wish to reiterate the Secretary General's call for Iraq to consider a moratorium on all executions in accordance with relevant General Assembly resolutions. respects for the rights of women, children, and persons with disabilities also remains inconsistent. These groups face discrimination and other social, cultural, and legal barriers to their full participation in the economic, social, and political life of Iraq. Despite the problems noted, Iraq is making progress in establishing the High Commission for Human Rights with the active support of the government of Iraq and the assistance of the United Nations. The commission will serve as a cornerstone of an Iraqi-owned and led system to guarantee the protection, respect, and the promotion of human rights of all Iraq's citizens in the future. On matters of environment, Mr. President, dust storms have increasingly become a major problem for the Iraqi people and the region. The dust storms in the region are mainly generated in Iraq. From airports to agricultural lands, dust storms extract a heavy annual economic toll amounting to billions. Dust storms also place significant strain on the public health. Hospitals are overwhelmed with treating persons with respiratory conditions caused by dust. Last month, I joined the environment ministers of the regional governments at a UNEP-hosted meeting in Nairobi. We established a clear political agreement on the need to address the issue of sand and dust storms, and UNEP will lead in the creation of a regional program in partnership with the governments, private sector, and civil society. A trust fund has been established for this effort, and I appeal to member states, especially those affected by dust storms in the region, to contribute resources. I also welcome the initiative of the government of the United Arab Emirates to host the next regional meeting to discuss further concrete steps. Mr. President, as in all my previous briefings to the Council, I would like to conclude with the urgent problems the youth faces in Iraq. After the devastating effect of war and caught amidst a soaring political crisis, Iraq's youth are largely left to fend themselves. Youth unemployment stands at 23%. I have made youth a priority because with their potential and passion, they are the future of Iraq. They will carry forward the stability, security, and prosperity that all Iraqis seek to build. I very much welcome the government's efforts to working towards a youth agenda. With the support of UNFPA, a national youth strategy will be launched in the second quarter of 2013. In February, I visited three different holy places in Baghdad with 30 young Iraqis of different faiths and backgrounds. Together we sat in shrines, churches, temples, in order to discuss what unites us along with our differences. I saw firsthand that reconciliation in Iraq can truly begin with the young. UNAMI will continue to provide a platform for young people to express themselves, be empowered, and vocalize their actions that will build their country. Mr. President, in closing, I'm reminded that the Iraqi people are blessed with three important assets: a rich and ancient culture, a vibrant young population, and third, national wealth. I hope that Iraq will remain determined and steadfast in this very challenging time and take advantage of this rich endowment to further advance their country. With the support of member states, UNAMI will continue to assist the people and the government of Iraq in its mandated task. I wish to thank the government of Iraq for its cooperation during 2013, as in the years before. Mr. President, I wish to place on record my deep thanks to the Security Council for its continued support. Thank you very much.
Я благодарю господина Коблера за его брифинг и предоставляю слово представителю Ирака. Прошу вас.
Thank you, Mr. President. Allow me at the outset to congratulate you and your country for assuming the presidency of the Security Council for this month, and to extend my thanks to the previous president of the Security Council, the permanent representative of the Republic of Korea, for his efforts during the month of February. I also would like to thank Mr. Martin Koppler, the special representative of the Secretary General in Iraq, and his team in Baghdad and New York for their commitment dedication, and tireless efforts to assist the government and people of Iraq. Since we are celebrating the day of Nowruz, as Mr. Koppler mentioned, I would like to congratulate our Kurdish people in Iraq who are celebrating the year of 2,713, and the Assyrian Christian Iraqis who are celebrating the year of 6,763, and I present the best of wishes for all the nations who celebrate Nowruz. As Mr. Koppler mentioned, we have a very ancient culture, and that's obvious from the year of the Assyrian community, which is around 7,000 years. Mr. President, having reviewed the report of the Secretary General on UNAMI's work in Iraq, document S/2013/154, I would like to present the following comments. On the political and security levels, Iraq is witnessing a political stalemate and an exchange of accusation among some of the political blocs, while protests are continuing in a number of cities that are calling for some legitimate demands. The most notable demands are the adoption of the General Amnesty Law, the abolition of the Justice and Accountability Law that replaced the de-beatification, and the release of detainees, especially women. Other demands which were added later, such as abolishing the Constitution and toppling the government. The original objectives of the demonstrations were deviated from the path of popular demands when the demonstrators were infiltrated by some extremist groups aiming at stirring sectarian tension and civil war. The foreign and regional prayers that hijacked the legitimate demands of the citizen were exposed when the flag of the Free Syrian Army and portrait of foreign officers were displayed during the demonstrations. The proof for this is that the support of Al-Qaeda, terrorist groups, and the leadership of the Ba'ath Party. Izzet Al-Duri, who was the vice president during Saddam regime time, appeared on the TV for the first time since 2003 to announce his support for the demonstrations. The Iraqi government declared that the demand of the protesters should be considered and differentiate between legitimate and illegitimate demands based on the Constitution. Therefore, there are continuous governmental and parliamentarian efforts to respond to these demands. On 9th of January 2013, the Iraqi Council of Ministers decided to form a ministerial-level committee chaired by the Deputy Prime Minister Hossein Shahristani, and the membership of the Ministries of Justice, Defense, Human Rights, Municipalities, Water Resources, the State Minister for Parliamentarian Affairs, and the Secretary General of the Council of Ministers, in addition to the Deputy Minister of Interior, to receive the legitimate demands from the demonstrators through delegation representing them. The committee was commissioned to study the demands and to make its recommendation to the Council of Ministers. Upon the recommendations of the committee, the Council of Ministers approved the following actions: extending the deadline for those who are subjected to the law of justice and accountability to submit requests for returning to service or retirement, processing the pension application for all persons subject to the law of justice and accountability, except Fida'i Saddam or Saddam commandos and the highest two ranks members of the Ba'ath Party, authorizing the Real Estate Registration Department to accept applications to lift the freezing on the properties of the former regime officials, activating Item 12 of the Law of Justice and Accountability by giving orders to ministries to accept applications for exemption of this law in order to submit them to the Council of Ministers and the Council of Representatives for approval, requesting the High Judicial Council to authorize judges to activate the legal process for detained women in order to facilitate their release except cases prohibited by the law, requesting the Ministry of Justice to immediately implement the release orders and not to wait for approval of any other authority. On 29 January, the Council of Ministers approved the increase of the salaries of the members of the Awakening Councils, who are mostly in western parts of Iraq, to become 500,000 Iraqi dinar a month at least, authorizing the Minister of Interior to give bonuses for interrogation officers to speed up the process of releasing the detainees. These executive procedures led to the realization of legitimate demands of the demonstrators, which include the following: the release of around 5,500, although Mr. Kopla said 3,500 detainees, including most of the women, the return of hundreds of officers from the former Iraqi army to service, the completion of more than 91,000 pension applications, lifting the ban on 1,800 properties that belong to members of the former Ba'ath regime. In regard to the sectarian slogans and the calls to cancel the Constitution, the Ministry of Interior warned that the language of sectarian incitement is considered a direct threat to security of the nations and its people. This language lays the foundation for the culture of hatred, the rejection of others, and promotes sectarian under the pretext of defending rights of certain sects. This language is also responsible for the discriminant violence that's combined with sectarian motives. The Ministry pointed out that this is rejected by the Iraqi Constitution and completely contradicts current regulation and laws, and warns citizens not to listen to the advocates of sectarian strife. The Ministry also said that based on the Ministry executive responsibility, it will decisively address these attempts aimed at destroying the unity of the country and will act according to the mandate it has from the law and the Constitution against these voices, no matter what their titles, social, religious, and political positions are. In spite of this worrying situation, the demonstrations are still peaceful, mostly, as it was witnessed by UNAMI in its visit to Al-Anbar province in February. Iraq, just like many countries which came out of dictatorship, is going through a democratic transition phase characterized by instability until the democratic institution gets strength and competitive political work runs smoothly within the framework of the Constitution. Over the past years, Iraq went through several crises, but finally, all led to a peaceful solution and positive results, such as the adoption of the Constitution, holding elections, forming the governments, and adopting the budgets. These crises and other examples polarized the Iraqi political currents and led to long tensions, but at the end took their course, and they didn't hinder the political process indefinitely. In another world, the struggle in Iraq moved from an armed conflict to acquire power to a peaceful conflict within the framework of the Constitution and the law, as I described in the past by saying the Iraqis have learned shouting at each other instead of shooting at each other. The Prime Minister has explained his view of the current events in the region and their reflection on internal situation in Iraq by stressing on the adherence of Iraqis to their unity and their rejection of violence, extremism, and sectarianism. We have warned several times, including in our last report before this Council, regarding the spillover of Syrian conflict, which could cause instability in the whole region. This was also echoed by the Secretary General Special Representative, Mr. Lakhdar Ebrahimi, when he warned several times regarding the repercussions of the Syrian conflict on neighboring countries. The killing of the Syrian soldiers after they surrendered to Iraqi authorities by armed terrorists who crossed from Syria to Al-Anbar province on 4th of March is the best proof of the link between the armed groups across the borders and the impact of the Syrian conflict on stability in the region. The Al-Qaeda terrorist groups announced its responsibility for the murder of these soldiers in collaboration with Al-Nusra Front terrorist group in Syria. Some areas inside Iraq are still witnessing acts of violence, while other areas are enjoying a good level of security, and Iraqi civilians are still subject to violence of terrorism, but less than 2011, and certainly less than the peak of sectarian violence in 2006 and 2007. There is a fear of the possibility of an increase in violence in the next few months as a result of the regional situation and if the current political crisis is not resolved. Although Iraqi security forces are combating terrorist activities, many of rebel groups, including Al-Qaeda, are still active in parts of Iraq. The situation is still critical in Baghdad, Kirkuk, Nainawa, Salah ad-Din, Al-Anbar, and Diyala provinces. The Iraqi government, through the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, condemned the attack on Camp Liberty on February 9th and immediately launched an investigation to find out the perpetrators and bring them to justice, and reconfirm the government's keenness to take the necessary measurement to ensure the security and safety of the inhabitants of the camp. The other committee, Dr. Ja'fari committee, which was responsible for some political dialogue, are still conducting dialogue with all political groups in order to try to solve the problems between all the factions in order to reach a consensus among the Iraqi political groups and coalitions. One of the positive points in the political process is that the Independent High Electoral Commission confirmed that it is moving forward with its timetable to have the provisional elections, which are scheduled for the 20th of April. The Commission is working despite the challenges to complete the special program for the elections according to the international standards and in collaboration with the International Support Team and UNAMI. The Commission finalized the approval of the political entities and coalitions and received names of candidates in the provinces. The Commission worked in the last stage of completing the procedures of hiring polling station employees and completing all logistical matters and printing voting ballots. On the economic and social level, on the economic level, Iraq has succeeded in curbing inflation, achieving economic growth, and increasing its oil exports. According to the World Bank, Iraq was able to achieve significant progress in developing and development according to its latest report published under the title Country Partnership Strategy for Iraq 2013 to 2016. In 2013, the Iraqi government is focusing on the policies of supporting the private sector, creating job opportunities, and stimulating economic development. As a result of Iraq's plan to increase its oil products, the country was able, at the end of 2012, to reach the second place among the exporting oil countries in OPEC, after Saudi Arabia, and stands now at its highest level of production in the last 30 years. The Iraqi economy grew by about 10% in 2012 for the second year in a row. The International Monetary Fund expects the Iraqi economy to grow by 13.5% in 2013, which makes it one of the fastest growing economies in the world. The Iraqi government is trying to diversify the economy and create new job opportunities for Iraq's working forces. The government budget for 2013 is around $138 billion, with an increase of 18% compared to 2012, which makes the largest budget in Iraq's history. The budget allocated 29.5% for energy, 19.7% for security, 17.7% for social services, 12.8% for education, and 6.8% for health. The investment portion of this year's budget is about 40%, and it's larger than any previous budget. The 39th Baghdad International Fair was opened by the Prime Minister of Iraq in November 2012 with the participation of 1,440 foreign companies from all over the world. Bilateral agreements were signed with countries and companies participating, aimed at expanding trade relations. On December 2012, Iraq ratified the Framework Agreement for Trade and Investment with the United States as first step towards expanding trade and investment between the two countries. The European Parliament ratified the Partnership and Cooperation Agreement between the Republic of Iraq and the European Union. In addition, Iraq membership was accepted by the Extractive Industrial Transparency Initiative on 12th of December 2012 after it completed all the requirements and procedures needed. This step was part of Iraq's efforts to enhance the work environment for companies in extractive industries. Iraq is working to attract investment for reconstruction after years of suffering from negligence due to the years of wars and sanctions. According to a report published in May 2012, foreign companies have invested more than $55 billion investment in projects and service contracts and other activities in all of Iraq. Direct foreign investments reached around $2 billion after being almost zero a decade ago. These amounts don't include tens of billions of dollars of investments in the energy sector. Within the framework of the infrastructure projects, $5 billion were allocated to build housing projects all over Iraq and according to the percentage of population. Several projects were inaugurated, including Al-Saydiya project in Baghdad in late November 2012, and the foundation was laid for the third Khaldun housing project for families of martyrs in Basra in mid-February 2013. In Najaf, another project is under construction that contains 1,100 apartments and will be supplied by clean electricity through solar panels, and it will include a medical clinic, schools, and kindergartens. In regard to adopting communication solution and technology to support social and economic development, the percentage of cell phones users in Iraq reached 80% and will rise to 93% in 2015. According to statement made available by four internet and telephone services providers, more than 5 million Iraqis use the internet, and Iraq has more than 25 million cell phone users. On the regional and international levels, Iraq is continuing to develop its relation with all countries of the region, especially with the state of Kuwait. Iraq is making efforts to support the moderate current in the region, encouraging dialogue and steering the region away from the danger of regional interventions. Regarding the Kuwaiti issue, the dispute was ended and a final settlement was reached for the issue of the Iraqi airways with the state of Kuwait as a result of signing an agreement between the two sides and Iraq payment of $500 million. On 29th January 2013, the Iraqi Council of Ministers ratified the draft law of navigation agreement in Khor Abdullah. The Foreign Minister Hoshar Zebari of Iraq visited the state of Kuwait on 27 February 2013 on board on the first Iraqi Airways airplane to inaugurate the first trip for Iraqi Airways to Kuwait after 23 years' absence. The joint technical team is working on the border pillars maintenance project, hoping that they could finish by the end of this month and close one of the most important issues between the two countries. This would pave the way to bilateral relations based on mutual respect and common interest, and paving the way for the exit of Iraq from Chapter 7. Within the framework of Iraq gaining its international status and to build on the success achieved through the hosting of several conferences in 2012, the Prime Minister of Iraq, Mr. Nouri al-Maliki, opened the conference of the Council of Arab Housing and Construction Ministers in its 29th session in Baghdad on 18 December 2012. In the same month, Baghdad hosted a conference on Palestinian and Arab prisoners in Israeli prisons with the participation of 70 countries. The conference concluded with the Baghdad Declaration and also recommended the acceptance of Iraq's proposal to establish a fund to support the Palestinian and Arab prisoners and their families. The government of Iraq contributed $2 million as an initial contribution to the fund. Iraq proposed an initiative during its presidency of the Arab League Summit to hold the first Arab conference for legal and national awareness that was opened in Baghdad on 10th of March. The aim was to develop and consolidate legal and national awareness of concept of citizenship and to recognize human rights, which will generate affiliation, interdependence and integration into the melting furnace of the society. Citizenship is the right for every citizen in the society, regardless of their racial, religious, or sectarian affiliation, because violation of human rights opened the door for wars. On the international level, Iraq participated in the Conference of the State Parties of the Chemical Weapons Convention, Session 17, which was held in The Hague for the period 26 to 30 December 2012. In this conference, Iraq was elected to the position of the vice president of the conference, in addition to the membership of the Credential Committee. That affirms Iraq's commitment to supporting international efforts in achieving a world free from chemical weapons to reach international peace and security. Mr. Hoshar Zebari, the foreign minister of Iraq, participated in the Munich Security Conference, which opened on 1st of February 2013. This conference discussed the most important international policy issues and security and economic problems on the regional and international level and their implications and ways to face them. The foreign minister also participated in the session of the Arab-Russian Cooperation Forum on the ministerial level in Moscow on 20th February 2013. His Excellency the Prime Minister chaired the Iraq delegation participating in the 12th session of the Organization of Islamic State Summit held in Cairo on 8th of February 2013. Building on Iraq's role in solving the Syrian problem peacefully and supporting the humanitarian situation in Syria, Iraq participated in the Donors Conference to support the humanitarian situation in Syria that was held in Kuwait. It is worth mentioning that Iraq is sheltering around 100,000 Syrian refugees, as Mr. Koppler mentioned, spread over the cities of Iraqi Kurdistan and Anbar province and other provinces. I asked Christian McNabb, Deputy SRSG in Iraq, about the status of Syrian refugee camps in Iraq during her visit to New York, and she answered that she visited them and they were good. The Foreign Minister welcomed on 26 February 2013 the Deputy Prime Minister and Minister of Foreign Affairs of Belgium to discuss the improvement of bilateral relations and cooperation in combating extremism and terrorism. The visit resulted in the signing of a memorandum of understanding for political and diplomatic cooperation between the Ministries of Foreign Affairs in the two countries. On 4th of March 2013, the Prime Minister welcomed His Excellency the Prime Minister of Arab Republic of Egypt, and both sides held talks coordinating political position and cooperation between the two countries on the regional level in addition to trade relations. In conclusion, Mr. President, I would like to emphasize the importance of the support of the members of the Security Council to assist Iraq to come out of Chapter 7 and resolutions that were imposed due to Saddam's crime of invading Kuwait, which forced the Security Council to adopt those resolutions when it considered Iraq as a threat to international peace and security. Iraq today is different than Iraq before 2003, as Secretary General stated in his report to the Security Council. Iraq must regain the status it enjoyed before 1990. Before I finish my speech, I would like to mention a few points that Mr. Koppler addressed in his speech. I think relations with Saudi Arabia is a very important step forward, and the exchange of prisoners between Iraq and Saudi Arabia is opening the door in addition to opening the borders, which is a good step forward. Regarding opening the border checkpoints between Iraq and Syria, we had several problems in the past. And the last one, when Syrian soldiers crossed the borders after a fight start between the Syrian regular army and the Syrian Free Army, and Iraq wanted to send these soldiers back from a different checkpoints. So they took them from Mosul to Anbar to send them back to Syria when they were ambushed and killed all of them, almost 40 Syrian soldiers and 20 Iraq soldiers were killed. Torture, the constitution and the law in Iraq forbid torture. However, we don't deny that there are some police officers who misconduct as in any other country in the world. But many, many officers were dismissed and some of them were brought to justice and legal action were taken against them when cases of torture was proven. I commend Mr. Koppler for his tireless effort to resettle the inhabitants of Camp Ashraf and Camp Huriya, and I personally commend him for his efforts to convince Albania to accept 210. This is a good start. I encourage other members of the Security Council to accept more of these inhabitants. And the only problem, or the only solution for this problem, is the resettlement of these people in other countries. The youth problem, I think the government realized how important the youth problem in Iraq, and I encourage the government to have a plan. But just one example, our mission has trained Iraqi youth in the mission of Iraq and the UN. And we have Iraqis who come from different parts of the world, and some of them came as far as Australia. And even I did give some internship to other students, encouraging youth and giving opportunity for them to have internship in order to have a better future. And they are from different nationalities from all over the world, but the majority of them are studying in U.S. universities. Thank you very much, Mr. President.
Я благодарю представителя Ирака за его заявление. В моем списке больше нет ораторов. Сейчас я приглашаю членов Совета продолжить обсуждение этого вопроса в рамках неофициальных консультаций. Заседание закрывается.